an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
One of the other things, though, that occurred back in her memory care community was we battled the management. I think that people should know that the process is often a very pretty process. It's a sales process. You're suddenly faced with being desperate to find the right place to move your loved one for what is likely the rest of their life. And you go to all the trouble of visiting numerous places, talking to people, trying to assess, and then we found the management was just not interested in changing anything for the better. And it became a bit of a battle. We were paying, should we say, over $200,000 a year. We just felt like, how are they not willing to listen to our recommendations, suggestions, and complaints and do something about it?
Dementia Discussions. Here to help and empower our heroic caregivers with knowledge and experience. Dementia Discussions with the caregivers themselves and memory loss professionals. Here to help with 30 years as a geriatric social worker is your Dementia Discussions host, Barbara Hammond.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Discussions. I'm Barbara Hammond. Today on the show, I'd like to welcome my guests, Gary and Marcy. I've had the honor and privilege of knowing Gary and Marcy for many years. I actually got to meet Gary's mom while she was still living in assisted living. Gosh, I don't remember, maybe 10 years ago. And Gary and Marcy have been in my support group, the group I co-facilitate with Monica Moore over at UCLA. So without further ado, welcome you guys. It's great to see you this morning.
Good to see you too.
Good to see you too. We miss being in person.
Yes, absolutely. It has been a long time since we've met in person, but we meet faithfully on Zoom. So it's great to see you when you can make it to group. So we're here to talk about Gary's mom, Esther. And although I met Esther years ago, I have not seen her. Maybe just paint a picture for all of us about your mom, who she was, and just about her personality.
Okay. Mom is particularly unique because she was born in Poland before World War II, had a very difficult beginning in life because she was born in 1927. She's 94 and a half currently. When she was 8 years old, she lost her mother to some version of heart disease back then. No doctors really involved. And by the time she had just turned 12, World War II broke out. As part of a Jewish family living in Poland, they were soon thereafter moved into a ghetto where she survived with her father and siblings for a while. And eventually her father and siblings were killed and she eventually went to a number of concentration camps. So she has experienced hell on earth by the time that she was 19 when the war.
Yeah, she wasn't even 18 when the war ended. Life wasn't real good for many people in that period between the two world wars. They were a poor family, but she had a tough life even before going through the war, and she was the only survivor of her family.
She came to the United States with help of an uncle who had come to the States before the war. She met my father on Coney Island in New York. He also Polish-born and a survivor of labor camps. They had a very volatile marriage. So there wasn't a great deal of joy in our household. I have an older sister. We had our version of dysfunction, and my parents managed to stay together in a very bad marriage until 2004. When after 50 years of marriage, they divorced. And he passed away in 2008 from heart disease, and mom finally moved to Florida. My sister and my mom had a very volatile relationship, as moms and daughters often do. Her current situation became obvious to us while she was still living in New Jersey. She needed a surgery for her back. And after anesthesia, as is common, people in their later years, often suddenly their what will become their dementia symptoms magnify and you suddenly start seeing them. After that surgery, she moved to Florida on her own. While she was there, she needed initially some med management because she was not capable of taking care of that. And when we saw some of those issues, we were starting to realize what we were getting into. One of the classic symptoms that really startled us in the sense that it caused us our lives to be disrupted is she said that the person coming in for med management and a little health care was stealing things. And we had to fly all the way to Florida to look for the items and find them. But the woman had stolen them and put them back according to mom's dementia. Mm-hmm. My sister has a daughter, and at that time she had her daughter to take care of. So even though she was closer living in North Carolina, it fell upon Marcy and me to go to take care of mom in Florida. And as things got worse, especially her driving, which becomes a very important issue and where I'm very focused to tell people that driving is a really tough thing to deal with and you must deal with it as painful as it is. We brought her to California because she agreed she wouldn't have a car in California and that would solve the driving problem.
Right. One of the more amusing things she did while she was in Florida, she decided to reorganize all of her medications and sorted them by color, which the caregiver was very distressed, but it still is a little bit funny.
Absolutely.
So we had her here in, as Barbara mentioned, in independent living at first. It was okay. The environment was pretty good. I was close by. I could see her regularly. The practice I started at that time. But while she was in independent living, we started really seeing the real difficult issues. She got lost once, and somebody was kind enough from the nearby neighborhood to bring her back and made it clear to us. She started going to the wrong apartments in the independent living. They didn't have their own multi-level, so we were able to hire first some people who came to her
a few hours a day, and then it got to be more and more. And then even at 24 hours a day, 24/7, it really was becoming too difficult to manage.
It became clear we had to move her to a dedicated memory care facility, and we chose the best place that we could assess at that time that turned into...
Major disappointment is the best way we could put it. Mm-hmm. We came here in November of 2012, and we moved her to memory care as of June 1st, 2015.
That experience where we felt that, yes, it was much more expensive, as anybody in this situation will come quickly to understand... We thought, of course, it will work out okay because we are no longer going to be paying for 24/7 independent, but it turned out that the care that we were paying a great deal for in her new community wasn't adequate enough, and we were back to paying for 24/7 care so that she was well taken care of.
She was just recently removed from hospice to palliative care after 4 years, 5 months, wow. which is an extraordinary period of time. But we had 24/7 care for the entire time that she was in the memory care unit. But thanks to, I think it was you, Barbara, who told us that there was an opening at a Borden Care. So she's been there for about just short of 18 months.
One of the other things, though, that occurred back in her memory care community was we battled the management. I think that people should know that the process is often a very pretty process. It's a sales process. You're suddenly faced with being desperate to find the right place to move your loved one for what is likely the rest of their life, and you go to all the trouble of visiting numerous places, talking to people, trying to assess, and then we found the management was just not interested in changing anything for the better. And it became a bit of a battle. We were paying, should we say, over $200,000 a year. We just felt like, how are they not willing to listen to our recommendations, suggestions, and complaints and do something about it? But we basically got a zero constantly from them of, oh, okay, we listen, we nod our heads, and then nothing changed.
You've talked about this years now of independent living with a care, because you went straight into memory care.
Yes.
And then now the small boarding care. And like, how is your mom now?
When she moved here, we did not get an official diagnosis for because of some family issues, but it has always appeared that she had frontotemporal dementia because of her loss of language. That was one of the first things that we noticed as very strong was that she couldn't find words, even though she was a very strong English speaker, despite not being her first language. One of the things that I kept saying is one of these days she might go back to one of her primary languages. And I was like, we are going to be in such bad place because neither of us speak either of them. When she was hospitalized once, they thought that she might have some Lewy body without Parkinson's. Her speech got less and less good over time. And then when we transferred her to hospice, she had about 48 hours, 72 hours, where she was barely responsive and unable to move. Since then,
did you think, oh, okay, this is it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We were prepared, and she had been crystal clear, and we had done all mm-hmm. the proper end-of-life documents that mm-hmm. we knew her wishes.
Right.
It became very clear to us going mm-hmm. through caring for someone with dementia that it's not an existence that any of us would want for ourselves. That's just personal choice. Everybody's different. But we were ready to let her go, and she recovered.
One of the things to understand how much she really understood that this was not the way she wanted to live was that she at least twice said to me, I want you to take me to the doctor and have the doctor kill me. We've learned through all this that you don't argue. But it was one of the few times where I just said, no, we can't.
Her language deteriorated. The good thing was her mood. We've been so fortunate. She's never gotten seriously aggressive. She got depressed. She cried often, but she was mostly cheerful as she was in her life in America.
Yeah, one of the things that's important to know about her is that despite everything she went through, at least to the world, she put out a very positive, warm, happy persona. It's hard to always know what's going on in, you know, someone's mind, but that was how she was, and she has mostly maintained that throughout this.
And
God, I mean, that's lovely, really.
How long ago did she stop being able to walk? She was still
was 2.5. It was pre-COVID,
two and a half, 3 years ago. She stopped being able to walk. She's past the point where she can even assist with a transfer. We use a Hoyer lift.
But again, even that, the first day when I was told we're going to have to use this lift instead of two people being able to assist her between chair and bed, I was afraid. And yet, the minute they put her in the lift and took her for that first transfer, she was smiling and enjoying it. And yeah, this resilience in her heart, I'll call it, is quite remarkable. She did eventually lose pretty much all speech. How long ago now? We've been going through this for over 10 years, 12 years. So those milestones don't stand out exactly. They just blur.
Mm-hmm. But I think also it's somewhat gradual. And when you're, especially Gary sees his mother before COVID almost every day, unless we were traveling. And since he's been able to go back, once we moved her to the boarding care, he's been there multiple times a week. When you see someone all the time, you don't necessarily notice big transitions as much as someone who might see them less often.
Yeah, it's a subtle. Yeah.
So where we are is she's 99% nonverbal. She speaks a gibberish. It's not the two languages, Polish and Yiddish, that she used to speak. It's not English. She seems to perk up when she hears me butcher a few words in Yiddish. I have a very repetitive set of statements I make to her. You look beautiful. Ask her, are you okay? I don't ask her, how are you? Because she rarely can say good or bad. She might say no on occasion to, are you okay? But she's often saying yes. And she will, again, based on her demeanor, she smiles more often than, you know, anything else. And she is, as I start labeling her, she's indestructible.
Anything that is life disturbing, her heart's fine, her lungs are fine, her kidneys, her liver, all those things that you absolutely need to survive. She's on no medication for any of them. And she's just keeps going. And yeah.
The minor things are just that in trying to help her actually sleep at night, she gets a moderate dose of Prozac. She gets something, an over-the-counter drug to help her with a little bit of reflux so that she's not getting that heartburn. And she needs a little, and especially she needs to maintain a good GI, especially when you're bedridden, you can't get to the bathroom. But she is otherwise just so, she even had a few years of edema, swollen feet and legs, and that even went away.
Oh, and she had a whole host of urinary tract infections.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Nothing in at least 3-4 years.
Right, which we have to acknowledge is part of the evidence of good care, because when somebody is getting incontinence care, that could happen very easily from caregivers not being careful, as the name infers, but she hasn't had any of those issues. She hasn't had bed sores to worry about. We are so fortunate. She will always be labeled a survivor. She just survives literally everything. She's even at this point, we've learned from other members of our caregiver support group that it's not uncommon for people to need their food to be pureed, because they're a choke risk.
And she was having a little bit of swallowing problems.
But she likes food. And that's, again, a sign of her being healthy. She has a good appetite. Mm-hmm. And she really likes food texture. So there are really distinct foods that she enjoys.
Right, we've eliminated certain foods that were causing more of a choking problem. So she manages to eat the food and not have too much of a problem with it.
And I'll use this opportunity to mention or transition that Marcy is a great cook. She's a fabulous partner to me and in care of my mom. And Marcy makes two foods, specifically chicken soup and chocolate mousse that mom loves. But again, without Marcy's help, I'd be floundering to a great degree. And it's the hardest thing because I don't get that support, obviously, anyplace else. My mom had no siblings that survived, and it wouldn't have made a difference. She was the young, we referred to her as the menopause baby. So there was a great age difference there. And my sister was always at a distance geographically and in their relationship. So again, I've taken good care of my mom. I get complimented constantly, but at least 50% of that belongs to Marcy. Anybody dealing with a parent should appreciate their partner, because there's no blood there. There's no long-term history, life history. And I just know it would have been so much harder without her.
Hey, Gary, it's true. I think of you as such a team. And caring for your mom. It's always Gary and Marcy and Gary. You guys are just in this together.
Yeah.
It shows. It really does.
And because Gary and I came together as a couple later in life, I have a really long history with Esther. We did not even meet till 2004. That was very different. And actually, my first time spending time with Gary's mother on an extended basis was, he had an incident that put him in the hospital when he was visiting me in New Jersey. And I spent most of the, like, 24 hours with his mother, which was really the first time I spent time with her.
They came to save me from a panic attack. And luckily, it was just a panic attack. I was not having a heart attack and learned that I was in no danger, actually. But when you put somebody in that situation, it's nice to have not only your mother, but your new partner there to support you. And that proved to me how special Marcy has always been.
Because of, in part, probably because of my profession, I'm a CPA who has experience with estates and trusts. When we moved Esther to California, one of the first things that I made sure that we did was to update her legal documents to be California compliant, because California is different than everywhere else.
And in reality, that we knew this is where she would eventually pass away. And it was going to save us a lot of difficulty if we had all of these documents. We found a very good attorney. We got a lot of good advice, which every family dealing with this really needs to know the legal ramifications of how to deal with things. Two siblings, as was our case, or what everybody would have perceived to be, what happens when two people have alternate different votes? How do you break ties without it possibly breaking a family bond? And that was something my mother stated clearly she didn't want to happen, but you can't change people's personalities. And my sister and I did not get along in life. So it wasn't that we suddenly came together and caring for my mother. So because I had the better circumstance to take care of my mother long term, it made sense for me to have the primary say on everything that occurred with her care. My sister was mostly passive through this, affirming, because a good decision's a good decision. But we did have one incredibly significant disagreement that has changed our relationship. And we're
sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Again, not a big shock for me, but I think families, I'm not ashamed to say it. It happens. And you're, again, the most important thing is Esther's care has not suffered because of it.
When you talk about the legal issues that you had to tackle, the documents, was Esther able to understand what was happening at that point?
And she first moved here. And one of the things that's kind of interesting to understand is that, and I used to go seminars in the day when we actually went places, and they talked about the capacity to be able to sign these basic legal documents is not necessarily, it does not necessarily mean to full capacity to function in the world. And so she was able to have that conversation. The attorney, like, you have to leave when I talk to her. And the only thing that the attorney was willing to understand was that one of the concepts that I have that most lawyers don't seem to want to understand, but she did actually put that into the documents. But it went fairly well. She did a will, a trust, an advance directive. Further along in the support group, we learned about the POLST document, POLST. And we were able to execute that. Gary, by that point, Esther did not have capacity to do that. But Gary was able to execute that with her doctor.
So that's a really good point, that you made changes while she still could, which is really great for everyone to know.
Yeah. We know that we struggled a little bit with it, and we know that we were incredibly fortunate. I hope to have provided documents that cover everything so that there is no question at the end. If, God forbid, dementia was part of my life, I really feel for families who are struggling when the documents aren't there, when they have to start proving, to look to judges, get involved with lawyers. Like, this is insurance, you know, this is life's insurance to deal with this issue long before it's critical.
Right.
And we, again, were very fortunate to, we also were fortunate that my parents had long-term care insurance.
Good insurance, but it was something
better than nothing. Just to interject, we learned in my father's end-of-life care that he used almost none of his insurance because he didn't want
none of his benefits.
His benefits, yes. And yet from that and with Marcy's guidance, we learned to actually not make that mistake with my mother's care and to use her benefits.
And we used every dime.
Did paid into that, so.
Yes, exactly.
And but going backwards, when, you know, we're talking about families getting along, when not long before I moved to California, I was working on this very large, strange project, and we all knew each other. When I was in the middle of moving my mother to a care facility, a number of people came up to me and said, by the time we finish this, my siblings and I no longer speak to each other. And when I moved to California, not long after we moved her to a full care facility, she had, it was all essentially all physical problems for my mother. But Gary and I were visiting and he noticed something and I called and they said, can we talk to you? We only see your brother here. We don't know that you're not going to, that he's not going to get mad because you interjected something. And when I spoke to my aunt, my father's only sister, she was like, you know, my father and she could not have cooperated the way my brother and I did. And we have another sibling who is uninvolved but not interfering in any way. It is more common that the siblings don't and family members don't get along in making these decisions and care than people really cooperating and working with each other.
Sadly, yeah.
It really is sad.
Good that Esther was able to talk about her wishes, get them out in writing, disputing that now, and that Marcy happens to have this profession where the finances were really overseen, which is great.
We could not imagine what it would be like if we didn't have the financial soundness that my father's hard work provided with my mother's support all those decades, and that then I was able to initially not screw up, and then Marcy was able to guide us much, much better so that we don't have any great fear of running out of money, because her family has in its side of women, they have longevity into their late 90s. And it's, again, the blessing and the curse that she's surviving without serious problems, except for the ultimate problem, which is dementia.
When we talked about moving Esther here, I had been involved with helping my mother with her father, and then with my father's mother, and then my mother after my father died. And I knew it would be a lot for us to do, but none of those people had dementia. And dementia is a whole other world and so much more challenging. Because when my mother was in the facility, which I didn't actually think she would last as long when she was moved there, she would be so unhappy and she'd be crying on the phone and ranting at me. And I'd tell her that this is not what we wanted for her, and we knew it wasn't what she wanted, but there was no other choice. And she could understand. She wasn't happy about it, but she could understand that was the only choice that there was. But when we had Gary's mother being unhappy or not feeling comfortable with the care or not knowing whether the care was adequate and what she could communicate, you're talking, you just don't have that ability to have a person that can understand, even at the most basic level, that you're doing the best that you can for them.
And you have done the best that you can. Really just knowing Esther and trying to look at her and assess what her issues are. And you have done, it seems like you have done that. You've been able to tackle whatever has come up with her, even without her saying it. Because she's not able to. She hasn't been able to verbalize any of the issues that have happened.
At this moment in her situation and for the last few years, I, of course, cherish those very rare occasions when she can muster the words, I love you, or when I do ask her, do you love me? And instead of a nod or a yes, she says the big absolute. I believe that's her intent to communicate for whatever we understand about communication and dementia. I give her credit because she does on occasion say no. So I believe she really is communicating.
It sounds like you went from being long distance caregivers to now in LA, and you've been so involved in her life.
But we again said we're so fortunate. I can't imagine what it's like if somebody is dealing with someone. A challenge I was afraid of, that maybe people should be aware of this, I don't know, quirk, is that Esther, with full dementia, had serious back pain issues and was under ongoing pain management care at UCLA, where she needed quarterly epidural pain shots. And I couldn't begin to imagine what it would have been like dealing with her in constant pain.
Is that a challenge you want to talk about? Or?
Well, again, it has that strange answer that it went away. The dementia interfered with the pain acknowledgement, and she doesn't acknowledge any back pain. Doctors might want to understand that in a study, but I don't know if the average family member will ever experience that. So we've been so fortunate to have no serious critical challenges other than that initial bout with the UTIs that were recurring.
One thing I guess you had mentioned, which I think a lot of people can relate to, is the suspiciousness and paranoia that, and I remember this when I visited her back at the assisted living that you guys were talking about, people were stealing from her.
We had the one unscheduled trip to Florida because the caregiver was stealing from her. But then even after she moved here, she would be like, people were stealing from her, things were gone. And we would be running over. Fortunately, it was only like a 15-minute drive, but going through and searching the whole apartment. I could do crime searches after doing that. I got really fast at going through absolutely all her closets, her furniture, the drawers.
Because underlying this was really that she put her jewelry and these other stolen items into a place for safekeeping. She hid it. And she couldn't find it. That's just a very simple reality that I'm sure most have to deal with. So we did, on top of having this ability to go over quickly and search the usual suspect places, my background in tech consulting allowed me to put some cameras around her apartment. So we had a little bit better idea of what she was doing at times, or could review what she was doing. But this is, I think, almost every family has the risk of having to deal with. And then again, just luckily her paranoia didn't amplify too much. It wasn't like she got super angry. She just wanted her things found. And a little bit, she wanted the person punished at times, she seemed to say.
But
we had to talk her out.
But one of the things that goes on is that stage, I think in a lot of ways, is the most difficult in terms of day-to-day life, because you're dealing with a person who thinks they're based in reality and they really aren't, or they're caught in whatever the things are in their manifestation of dementia, which is very difficult. And whether it's wandering or, you know, things missing that they, you know, people stealing from them, which are two of the most common ones, it is one of the most difficult times.
Most people are so set there in their belief. Mm-hmm. So for you to say, I'm sure it's there somewhere, we'll find it, don't worry, we usually come up with these things, that often doesn't go over well.
The one time when we went to Florida and found all but one of the missing items, she was like, oh, the caregiver put it back.
And actually, the additional trouble there is if your family member feels that person is stolen, you could lose a good caregiver because they will rarely accept them back. I don't know if any families go to the elaborate ruse of confession and asking for forgiveness, but the real challenge here is finding great caregivers. And we've been very fortunate to have had nearly 1,000 batting average.
And the one person who's been with us the longest is now helping family of someone else we met in Barbara and Monica's dementia group, is absolutely amazed at what a great caregiver she is and how much she's helping in their family.
Sound great care, which is wonderful.
You had thought about is what are the things that we might have done better? And I think that I was more realistic in seeing the problems. And it's hard to be totally detached and rational about, you know, what the situation is that your parent is in.
I've just been called detached and irrational.
Because we want things to be better. I say that about money because that's what I deal with all the time. And I say almost no one is totally rational about how they handle their money. And I can think of examples in my own life where I was not really rational about what I was seeing, even though I knew better. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to see when we moved Esther to independent living, because the first place was considered independent living, but they allowed as much care as you were willing to bring in on your own and pay for. I was concerned that was more than she could handle. And there were certain social things. We've learned that in these independent living places and assisted living, the hierarchies and cliques, and it's different than high school, but it's really strong.
There's some mean girls.
And mean boys, yes. I figured out that it has to do with cognitive and physical, what do you call it, ability are the things that near the top of the hierarchy as opposed to necessarily whether you're cute or pretty. So that was difficult. And then when we moved her to the first memory care facility, one of the questions that I wish I had asked and even thought of was, how do you deal with your outliers? Because especially in a memory care unit, and most of them aren't too large, you can have your population is constantly shifting between people who have greater cognitive ability to those who are getting to the end of it. How do they deal with the fact that you have certain people who are outliers? And when she first moved there, she was in out of the about 30 people. 25 to 30 people. She was in the 4 or 5 in terms of ability, but then it starts to shift. And they were not doing a good job of being able to help her because she was outside the core group. Yeah.
Interesting. So you're reflecting back on the things you wish you had done, questions you wish you had.
And I don't know if any of the places have a good answer to that, is how do you deal with the outlier?
Good question.
One of my cousins, his mother was in a memory care place in a different part of the country. And he said, everyone there is very high functioning. And my thought was, what happens when they're not?
Right. It's progressive. So if you could give other caregivers advice, and you guys have had a long journey, you've been at this a long time. Any advice you would give other folks?
Oh, be ready for a long haul because it's likely going to be.
Right. Therefore, for that long haul, manage your legal issues early on. And it's sad that you also have to immediately look at your financial situation because it could drain a lot of families very quickly if you don't take those things into consideration. If you're not good at that, like I wasn't, find somebody as good as Marcy that can help you. Obviously, Barbara and others like her can give you a great amount of insight or introductions to people that can handle that side of it.
As I've said to some people, a couple people that I know where there aren't resources, is start getting onto those lists of places that will accept your whatever you have early. You don't know when you're going to need it, but they're not going to likely have a bed or a place when the moment you need it, if you're waiting to the last minute.
Yeah, that's a good point, to start researching like you guys did. You really did the research for these facilities.
And of the top 10 things that the group Barbara and Monica moderate have taught us is you have to take care of yourself. It was very hard in the beginning for us to decide to take care of ourselves, to go away for a day, to go away for a weekend. And it was really difficult to go away for a bona fide vacation that we desperately needed and were afraid of how she would be, because if she had a crisis, how would we get there? How would we deal with it? Don't panic, but just think about those things.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's just downright hard. You're watching someone that you care about basically no longer be the person that you know. After many of our sessions, I figured out why dementia is so difficult, because it affects any or all parts of the brain, and it's somewhat different in every person because it depends on the damage is in the brain.
Yeah, so, that's exactly right. So you never know what's going to be affected.
So I refer to it as global idiosyncratic.
World War idiosyncratic.
And despite my mother wishing her little boy turning into a doctor, and I am not, it's also, I think, one thing learned in this is that there really aren't a lot of true medical options available. This really becomes a family social crisis to deal with and turn it into a manageable environment that, again, does as little harm to all those involved. Nobody's going to truly benefit and have any advantage from going through this, but if you can mitigate as much of the difficulties and stresses, it's so important, again, to do that so that all of you get taken care of, the person with dementia, as well as all the family members involved in the care. So I could have definitely gone without this in my life, but I'm really proud of how well we took care of it under all these circumstances. Far from perfect, but we did better than most.
Your mom is a survivor, and so are you guys, really. You have come such a long way, this has been a rough road for you on your relationship. Really, think about it. You really have survived this together, so united. It's beautiful to see. So I know you come to group, you come together often. Your work together has really been lovely. It's such a model for everyone.
Thank you.
And so I applaud you guys for that. Really, I commend you. Really, it's tremendous.
And we have not done the hands-on care that so many in our group have done, either with or without help. And when I think of one of our former members who lived in a walk-up studio with her father, who had been a war vet who with PTSD, who'd been on the street, and had her parent living with her, her father living with her, to the end of his life. I just can't imagine how much more difficult that would be than we've had the advantage of being able to give that care, that day-to-day hands-on care to others.
Yeah, but still, it's still pretty long, hard road just to keep the watchful eye that you have. Gary, Marcy, I want to thank you for coming on today. And I so appreciate you guys having the courage to share your journey with us. It's been a long, hard one. And I really, like I said, I commend you for sticking in there as diligently as you have.
And Barbara, we wish anybody going through what we're going through to find people like you to teach us, support us, lead us. Because, again, it would have been so much harder without you, Barbara and Monica. I hope you, I'm sure you know that, but there's never enough times that you should be told that, just like I've learned to accept the compliments.
Thank you. We're a team. Team up. We're a team.
Thank you. And I look at it as a responsibility to share what we've learned with others, because everybody shouldn't have to work so hard.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave me a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.